Morning. Morning, everyone. Today's top of Menachos Chav Gimel. We are on Chav Gimel Menachos. We're at the top of the Amud. We're at the 2-dot Titmar. And the Gemara is going to be starting a discussion. Before beginning the discussion, let's just quickly recap. Yesterday in the Mishnah, Chav Beis Man Aleph, the Mishnah talked about, Tarovus talks about mixtures. So the Mishnah gives examples where a kumis gets mixed up with something else. The other examples given in the Mishnah is, let's say, another kumis, or let's say Minchas Kohanim, or let's say Minchas Nesachim. So the common denominator of this particular Tarovus is that everything that got mixed together is supposed to go onto the top of the Mizbech and be burnt on the top of the Mizbech. So you have over here a Tarovus, but destination for all these items are one singular destination, the top of the Mizbech, and therefore you take it, you put it on top of the Mizbech, and it's kosher. So Rabbi Yehuda, however, introduces an issue, a consideration, and therefore an issue. Rabbi Yehuda says that what happens is that when you have such a Tarovus, such a mixture of a komitz, and let's say, for example, Minchas Nesachim, where there the ratio of flour and oil are not the same ratio. And what's going to end up happening now is you're going to have a redistribution. There will be a diffusion and a redistribution of the oil. The oil from the Minchas Nesachim will shift over now to the komitz. And now what you're going to have is, in the komitz, you're going to have an excess amount of oil. That's yeser. In the Minchas Nesachim, you're going to have a lack of oil, not the requisite amount of oil. That's chaser. And so therefore, both of those are going to be possible. So Rav Yehuda says you have to take that into consideration, because you have to take that in consideration. They're bolea zumizu. And so therefore, Rav Yehuda says they're going to be possible. We already pointed out, but I'll just simply reiterate. Rashi over here notes, back in the Mishnah, in yesterday's daf, that the Mishnah was only really focusing on the kametz. And that's why the Mishnah always kept saying the word psula, or kishera, meaning only focusing on the kametz. But as the way we just explained the Mishnah, truth of the matter is that it would be a problem both for the kometz and for the Minchas Nesachim as well. In other words, once you have oil shifting from one to another, so then you are introducing two problems, one of yeser and the other one of chaser. So the truth of the matter is, as we pointed out yesterday, really it's psulos, meaning they're both psul, the kometz and the Minchas Nesachim. Yesterday's Gemara started off with a simple question. I don't know about simple, but it is a pretty straightforward question. How can Rav Yehuda even be bothered by any of this? Min b'mino in a bato, when you have like items that get mixed together, it does not bato. No one loses their identity. So even if there is a redistribution of the oil, so the Gemara's question is, according to Rav Yehuda, so what? So oil gets distributed from one to another. Each one maintains its identity of what it was by min b'mino, there's no bito. And so why should it therefore become a problem? So the Gemara's answer was, and this is what we said yesterday, this is not just a straightforward case of min b'mino. This is min b'mino v'davar acher. The mixture over here is oils, but also flour as well. Min b'mino v'davar acher, the way Rav Yehuda looks at it, is that we take the min b'mino, we ignore, right, the Gemara's language is misalikis mino, we remove the min, meaning we ignore the mino, we look at the davar acher, which obviously is eno mino, and then this turns into a classic tarovus of min b'sheino mino. And now this is a min b'sheino mino, so then you obviously have to deal with the fact that the oil that comes in now is going to be mevutal, it's going to be negated, so it'll become nullified. And now we have a problem where, too much oil in one, not enough oil in the other, and that brings us to our problem. That's a quick recap of what we saw in yesterday's daf. We are now on the top of the Amr Chav Gimel Amr Aleph with the words Yedmar Kometz the Minchas Chote. So I have now the Kemitza of a Minchas Chote. Minchas Chote, as we've spoken about since the beginning of the Masechta, is the Mincha offered by a sinner who, under certain circumstances, if cannot afford a Chatos, a Karban Chatos, is allowed to bring a flower offering. Flower offering, of course, being much cheaper than that of an animal. So there are limited opportunities. See the Torah, see Perikei Vayikra. Limited opportunities in which a chote can bring a mincha. The characteristics of a mincha's chote is that there is no oil and there's no lavona. And so fine. So that's the mincha of a chote. The Mishnah over here, sorry, not the Mishnah. The Gemara over here discusses a scenario in which the mincha of a chote subsequently has a little bit of oil, right? And just to be clear about the language I'm using, not soiled, but rather oiled. So the kometz of a mincha becomes now oiled. A little bit of oil gets onto it. Now, does the Gemara mean that you're supposed to put on oil? Probably not. It just kind of, whatever. The way Tosus describes it, if you'd like to see, is the there's shemen from a previous mincha, and what happens is that you put this kometz in a bowl, and it kind of like it got soiled, and again, better words to describe it, it got oiled from a previous mincha. Okay, however the oil got there, the point of the discussion is as follows. We know that by a minchas chote, so it's not to have oil. The Torah says it very clearly. And so if a little bit of oil gets onto it, obviously we're talking about before it's burnt on the top of the Mizbeach, so is that now going to be a disqualification? So Rav Yochanan's position is, that's right. So Rav Yochanan, our apostle, Rav Yochanan says disqualified. And Kipshuto, Rav Yochanan's position, is really easy to understand. We have now a mincha that the Torah specifically says no oil should go on it, and therefore if you have a little bit of oil going on, it's disqualified. So, and Reish Lakish says, no. He says, it's perfectly fine. It would be totally fine if the comments of a minchas chote got a little bit of oil. It'd be no problem if this got a little bit of oil on it and it went up onto the Mizbeach. So, just 1 second. So who wants my mishach shechol b'shayar elug ma'aleu v'haksiv lo yasim ala Hashem v'lo yitein la lavona? To which the Gemara says, what about the pasuk in the Torah? Pasuk in the Torah states very clearly that for the mincha v'chote, though it should not have oil and it should not have lavona, and you're telling me that there is no hesitation whatsoever to take the kibitza and to put it in a bowl that has residual oil from a previous mincha. What do you mean it's not a problem? Of course it's a problem. The pasuk says it shouldn't have it. Answers the Gemara, Ha'ushalo yikva l'Hashem kechavrasah. Gemara says, no. As far as the Pasuk in the Torah is concerned, the Pasuk in the Torah says, look, there is a prohibition with the mincha v'chote, but it's not that oil is banned from a mincha's chote. What it simply means is that when preparing the mincha v'chote, you do not prepare it in the same manner as you would prepare a standard mincha. Standard mincha has shemen going in initially. And for that, so for a standard mincha in the preparation, so you open up the recipe book of how to put together a standard mincha, so it's otherwise known as the Torah, and the Torah gives you very clear instructions in terms of how to put it together. With the minchas chote, the only thing the Torah is saying is, initially upon preparation, this is not the way you're going to do it. You don't prepare it this way initially. Subsequently, if oil goes on it, that's not a violation of the Torah whatsoever, and it would not be a problem whatsoever.
What about other liquids, water, wine?
Well, water, we pointed out, water is going to every mincha. Meaning water is kind of like the unspoken liquid that goes into every mincha. Halachically, what kind of status does water have? It's not clear. But
inside the mincha itself?
Inside the mincha, that's correct, yeah.
Would it make chametz? The chametz?
They're going to bake it before it turns into chametz. It doesn't turn into chametz instantly.
Uh-huh.
So as far as water is concerned, so yeah, so water is always going to go in. But in terms of oil, so the Torah says no oil. And what Reish Lakish is modifying is that when the Torah says no oil, it means upon preparation, no oil. Subsequent to that, if a little oil goes on it, it would be fine. Okay, Rav Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish on a brayso, and the brayso over here describes what seemingly is the following. The word charev literally means dry. In the context of a mincha, it means an oil-free mincha, otherwise known as what we would describe as a minchas chote. So if a minchas chote, and again, I'm just going to explain the brayso kipshuto, if the mincha v'chote gets mixed up with a standard mincha, literally balul means mixed together with oil, standard mincha, so Rav Yehuda Amar lo, I'm sorry, Tanakama says yakriv, you can offer it, and Rav Yehuda Amar lo yakriv. Now, my love comes to minchas chote, the arev becomes to minchas sedava. Now the Gemara is presenting what I presented, which is simple pshat in the brisa. We're talking about where the mincha of a chote gets mixed in with the mincha of a nedava. And if that's in fact the case, so what do we have over here? We have a very clear instruction of, according to Rav Yehuda, lo yakriv, that you cannot offer it. Now the Chachamim say you can offer it, so why are we focusing on Rav Yehuda? Why aren't we focusing on the Chachamim? Rashi to that says that the Chachamim principally agree, but remember, going back to what we learned in yesterday's daf, we are describing over here olin. Those are those things that are going on the top of the Mizbeach. Where the Chachamim hold that olim are ena mevatlo zuazu, they do not negate one another. So in other words, for an external reason, the Chachamim say you're allowed to offer it. But in principle, however, the Chachamim are, in fact, in agreement to Rabbi Yehuda, the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And so now what comes out is as follows. We have now just presented a brisa in front of us. I have the comments of a dry mincha gets mixed in with the comments of an oily mincha. And again, if we could just ignore the Chacham for a moment, I know that's a funny sentence. But if we could ignore the Chacham for the moment, so Rav Yehuda says it cannot be offered on the Mizbech. Ostensibly the reason why is because you took a dry mincha or the comments of a dry mincha and you introduced oil into it. And for that reason, you can't offer it on the Mizbech. If all this is correct, obviously, this serves as a question against Reish Lakish. The Gemara's response, lo. Minchas parm ve'elim b'minchas kvasim. So the Gemara says, no, incorrect pshat, let's offer correct pshat. Correct pshat in the Brei says that we're not talking about a dry kometz, meaning the kometz of a chote. We're actually describing a mincha of oil, gets mixed up with mincha of oil. It's just different ratios. Minchas Sesachim, like we've been discussing a lot, you know, since the beginning of the Masechta, is that together with a standard carbon, you bring flour and oil. We will call it Minchas Sesachim, but the ratio is different. For a standard mincha, the ratio, as we described in yesterday's daf, is 1:1. One isarin of flour to one log of oil. When it comes to Minchas Sesachim, the ratio, now it fluctuates a little bit. Sometimes it's 1:2, one isarin of flour to two log of shemen, or 1:3. One isarin of flour, 2-3 log of shemen. Like I described yesterday, when it comes to the minchas asachim, it is like a batter. In other words, it's extraordinarily oily, 2 or 3 times more oily than your standard mincha, and so it has like a batter-type consistency. In any regard, what the Bryce is describing is that I have these two get mixed up together, and now you have a machlokas whether you can or you cannot offer it. Now, why is this a better pshat? It's not a better pshat. It just now is it's a better defense for Reish Lakish. No longer is the Braisa describing the comments of a dry mincha, meaning a minchas chote. The Braisa now is just simply describing the sachim getting mixed up one with another. So in other words, it doesn't present a problem to Reish Lakish whatsoever. That's why it's a better pshat in the Braisa. Vis-a-vis what the Braisa is actually now saying is that when I have these Nesachim get mixed together, so now according to Rav Yehuda, we have a problem. Why do we have a problem? So the reason why we have a problem is because they're not the same ratio of flour and oil. One has a ratio of 1:2. The other has a ratio of 1:3. So they don't have the same ratio. By the way, the larger animals have more oil. That's why the ratio of the larger animals are 1:3. The smaller animals have less oil. That's why it's the ratio 1:2. The problem, according to Rav Yehuda now, is that once they get mixed together, so then the ratios go out of whack. And that's why according to Rav Yehuda, can't be offered. This is now the pshat that we're offering in the Braisa. It helps us in that the Braisa no longer serves as a question against Reish Lakish. Now the Gemara says, but what we're going to do is we're going to unroll the entire Braisa. We're going to read the entire Braisa. And we're going to now see that it's very difficult to offer the pshat that we just offered. V'habed hejikatani la. Let's look at the Braisa in its totality. Here's how the Braisa reads. Minchas parm ve'elim be'minchas kvasim. V'charav shinisar be'balol yakrif ve'yehudam lo yakrif. The Braisa over here is talking about both the case of various minchas asachim that get mixed together, minchas asachim which had a 3:1 ratio, getting mixed in with minchas asachim that had a 2:1 ratio, or the comets of a dry mincha getting mixed in with the comments of a oil mincha. And so once we see the Braisa in its totality, the Braisa is clearly talking about both cases. So how now is this, how can we defend Reish Lakish when if you read the Braisa in its totality, sounds like the Braisa is in fact talking about the comments of a dry mincha. And again, the Braisa now comes out that according to Rav Yehuda, it cannot be offered on the Mizbech. Why? Presumably because the dry mincha, the comments of the dry mincha, has got some oil on it, and the Torah says no oil. And again, supporting Rav Yochanan, Kashan Reish Lakish. Rav Yehuda Amar Lo Yakri, Perushka Mefarishla. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? I know it's difficult to read the Braisa, but let's read the Braisa in the following manner. Let's say when the Braisa says the words Charav, it's not talking about a new case. It's actually still staying on the case of the various Nesachim that get mixed in one with another. And all the Braisa is just simply telling us is that you know what the case of Charav and the case of Charav and Balal is talking about? It's the perish on the first part of the Braisa. The Braisa is talking about one singular case. It's just that The Braisa says it in an ambiguous manner, and then clarified exactly what the Braisa is talking about. I'm sure you noticed this, but in other words, what the Braisa now is saying, the way we're understanding the Braisa, is that when we use the word charav, charav generally means dry. And generally speaking, when you see the word charav, it's going on a dry, meaning no oil whatsoever, the comets of a chote. Now, the way we're presenting the Braisa, the word charav over here means relatively dry, meaning in relative to the larger nesachim, I'm sorry, the nesachim of a larger animal, where there's a 3-to-1 ratio, which is really oily, so the nesachim of a kevis is not as oily, so relatively speaking, it's dry. That's the way the Braisa is now using the word charav versus balo. Again, admission, it's a dochik, it's a stretch of the Braisa, it's a fourth shot of the Braisa, but if we have an opportunity to defend Reish Lakish, so the Gemara says, so obviously we're going to do it. We'll use this as an opportunity. Okay. Adkan, so that takes us to the first our first sergiv today. Question on the table, you have a mincha v'chote, the kemitza of the mincha's chote, which obviously had no oil in it whatsoever, and then some oil gets on it. Is it going to be disqualified to be brought on the mizbech? Rav Yochanan says yes, Rav Reish Lakish says no. And the various arguments and supports and proofs for each position. Next, by Rava, komisha mitzah shmano agabe etzemahu. Okay, you have the kemitza of a standard mincha. Kemitza of a standard mincha obviously saturated with oil, right? Because your mincha is flour and oil getting mixed together. And what happens is that as you are bringing the kemitza to the top of the mizbeach, some of the oil gets squeezed out. Now, keep in mind, by the way, from a pragmatic standpoint, this is unlikely because the kemitza is being brought up in a bowl. Remember, you took the kemitza and you were mekadesh kometz. You took the kemitza and you put it into a second bowl. So the likelihood is now is that as you bring it up, as the kohen's bringing it up the mizbeach, and then going to put it on the top of the mizbeach, there's no mitzui. He's not going to be squeezing it out. In other words, he'll just simply take the bowl, invert it, and put it down on the mizbeach. So, admittedly, it's an unlikely scenario, but still, the principle over here is what the Gemara is going to be really focusing on. So now you have Shmeinu agabe etzim, you have the oil of the comets that drips onto the wood. Mahu. A wood which is on the mizbeach. Yeah, good, excellent clarification. So the wood that we're talking about is the wood that's on the mizbeach. So now, mahu, what would be the status? Meaning, what I'm now going to do, or again, the kohen, not me, is that the kohen's going to take the remainder of the comets, which is most of the comets, and he's going to put it on that piece of wood. So what you have now over here is, you have really no deficiency whatsoever. Yes, it's true, some of the oil separated from the comets and made it to the wood on the mizbeach, but you're going to just simply put the comets on top of it. And now, question on the table is that we do have a chibur. There is a connection between the oil that got squeezed out and the comets. Is that connection now going to be halachically a binding connection? And so therefore, there's no chaser, there's no deficiency of the kemitza. The kemitza is still considered intact, and therefore we're fine, or maybe no. Maybe once oil got separated from the comets, so now we have a comet which is chaser, and therefore that presents a problem. Answers the Gemara, chibur ol, I'm sorry, let me just first reread the Gemara's question. Itmar, I'm sorry, Bari Rava. Komet shemitzah b'shman ol gabi itzamahu. Chibur olam ke'olam damu. Are we going to say that the connection of an ola is considered a connection? Olav ke'olam damu or no? Maybe the connection, even though physically connected, but halachically, once the oil has been separated from the comets, it is now considered a detachment. And even if I subsequently put the two together, physically making contact one with the other, it still wouldn't be good. So, Amalei Ravina Ravashi Lav Hainu De Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish De Itmar. So the Gemara says, well, we do know of another machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and presumably the two their positions over there would align to the two sides of the question over here. Well, first, let's learn together the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. We saw this towards the end of Zvachim. So for us, this would be Chazara. Amala Evashem Bo Kazayas Ve'etzem Mashlim Ol Chazayas. We are now in the final prakim of Zvachim. So as you recall, remember we discussed at length the Isurim in the Torah of Shchut Echutz and Ma'ale Bechutz. Shchut Echutz is shechting a carbon outside the base of Mikdash. Ma'ale Bechutz is offering a carbon outside of the base of Mikdash, meaning somebody set up some sort of bama outside at a time when bamas were not allowed. And so therefore there's an iser kares in the Torah for offering a carbon outside of the base of Mikdash. So here, as we discussed back in Zvachim, in order to violate the iser, so it has to be a significant amount that goes on the outer mizbech. By significant amount, like we say throughout Shas, it means a kezias. So here now the Mishnah is describing taking some meat and offering it on the Mizbech outside the Beis HaMikdash. You don't have the full kezias, but meat, it's a small limb of the animal. The meat, while it's attached to the bone, is the bone now going to, in fact, be able to contribute to the volume of kezias so that now you have violated the Isra of Hela B'chutz? And this is a machlokus between Rav Yochanan Rish Lakish. So the meat that went up on a mizbech outside the Beis HaMikdash did not have a kezias, but it was still connected to bone, and the bone will now, coupled with the meat, get us to the volume of a kezias. Reb Yochanan Amar Chai Rish Lakish Amar Potter. And so here a machlokus between the Amoraim. Now Rav Yochanan Amar Chai Chibur Olam Kolam Damu. Now Rav Yochanan says this: we have chibur, we have an attachment between the meat and the bone. And that attachment now is significant, so significant that we're actually going to give the bone meat status. Let's all remember, even though a carbon ola is totally burnt on the Mizbeach, as far as the bone is concerned, there's no requirement to burn the bone on the Mizbeach. It just happens to be that there's no mitzvah to separate meat from bone. So the meat is going to get burned on the top of the Mizbeach of a carbon ola, so bone's going to come along for the ride. But not because there's an independent obligation to burn bone. But Rav Yochanan's argument is, but because the bone is coming along for the ride, and because the bone is attached to the meat, so therefore status-wise, the bone is going to take on the status of the meat. And therefore, if I have a kezias, even though the kezias is a composite of meat and bone, Rav Yochanan will tell you, that gets you to the shear. And in this particular case, it's going to work against you. Because now you have violated the Isra of Hela B'chutz. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, back to the Gemara, Amar Pater, Chibur Olam Lav Kolam Damu. And Reish Lakish says, no, you're going to be exempt. Because although this is connected to the carbon Ola, the bone is connected, but it's not the part of the carbon that is a mitzvah to be burnt on the Mizbeach. And even though it's connected, connection over here is not significant. Chiburi Olin, Lav Kolam. Just because it's connected doesn't mean it receives the status of a carbon ola. It just means it's connected. And therefore, according to Reish Lakish, if I don't have a kezias of meat, and even though the bone together with the meat will make a kezias, but Reish Lakish will tell you, the bone is halachically insignificant. What the Gemara now is proposing, is suggesting, is that now that we learned this machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, let's now transfer that principles, each one's principle over here, and seemingly it'd be the same thing. Once I have a kemitza of flour and oil, and once some of the oil separated, but I'm now going to have connection, actual physical connection, between the kemitza and the oil, so now at least can we say now that they are connected enough so that there's no deficiency, there's no chaser in vis-a-vis the kemitza. And so, seemingly, Rav Yochanan's position would be chibur, the connection. It's connected. And therefore, in this case, it would work for us. It'd be valid. And Reish Lakish will say, no. In other words, just because they're touching one another doesn't give it a status of being connected. It's not unified. And therefore, you have a kometz which has a deficiency of oil, and therefore it's no good. That's what the Gemara is suggesting, and now the Gemara is going to deflect. The Gemara says that we know the machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan vis-a-vis Hela B'chutz, but that doesn't necessarily translate to our discussion over here. Tibayla Rav Yochanan, Tibayla Reish Lakish. The Gemara goes over both sides. Tibayla Rav Yochanan. First, we're going to ask the question according to Rav Yochanan. Ad kan lokama Rav Yochanan asam ela be'etzem demina de baser hu. Rav Yochanan over there was talking about a bone. So a bone is in fact part and parcel of the animal. Meaning we've used this argument before. An animal is an entity. It's a singular unit. Obviously, a composition of meat, bones, sinews, etc., etc. But in other words, but organically, it's all one entity. And so therefore, for Rav Yochanan to be able to look at the bone and the flesh as one item while being connected, so it's easier to look at it that way, considering the fact that organically, it was one entity to begin with. But over here, we're talking about flour and oil. Flour and oil are not organically the same. Yes, we put them in a bowl together. Yes, we mix them together. But ultimately, the flour and the oil are not coming organically from one source. It's coming from two separate sources. So once the oil now separates from the kometz, so for Rav Yochanan, it'd be easier to look at it as two entities and not as one entity. So that is how we can separate the two cases according to Rav Yochanan. Odilma filo reish lakish lo kamar ela be'etzem davar mefarishu v'parish lav mitzvah la'adure. And for reish lakish, we can actually argue in the other direction. As far as Reish Lakish is concerned, when it comes to meat and bones, remember, his position is that if only between the two we have a kazayas, I did not violate Hela Bechutz because I look at bones separate from the meat. But now the Gemara argues on behalf of Reish Lakish, you know why we look at the bones separate from the meat? Because let's imagine, we don't have to imagine, meaning we've learned this back in Tzvachim, that while burning the carbon ola on the Mizbeach, because of the heat, so one of the bones, just the bone by itself, flew off the Mizbeach. Is there a requirement for me now to take the bone and put it on top of the Mizbeach? The answer is no. No, there's no requirement. Again, because when it comes to an Ola, the mitzvah is not to burn bone, the mitzvah is to burn the meat, the flesh, but not the bone. So you see that when it comes to the bone really, again, it will go on the top of the Mizbeach because it's connected, it's attached. But really there is no mitzvah whatsoever to burn the bone. And so therefore Reish Lakish will tell you that I will never look at bone and meat as one entity, even while being attached, and so therefore they're not going to be mitzar for kazayas. However, aval shemen d'lav bar mefarishu lo. But when it comes to the oil of a kometz, the mitzvah is to burn the kemitza. The kemitza is the oil and the flour. Even as some of the oil separates, but that was oil that was supposed to be burnt on the mizbeach. So therefore, Reish Lakish here can argue that in the case of the meat and bone, so I can separate the two, but I can separate the two because the bone, there's no mitzvah to burn the bone on the Mizbeach. Over here, when it comes to the oil of a comet, there is a mitzvah to burn the oil. So maybe over here, Reish Lakish would argue that there would be a chibor and they would be connected, or dumaloshna, or maybe no. Maybe Reish Lakish would look at the two cases being the same and take what the Gemara says now, so we are left unresolved. So now keep in mind what we're leaving unresolved. Meaning we know there's a machlok between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Excuse me. We know there's a machlok between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding meat and bone, whether they're mitzarf, whether they can be combined for kazai, so that a person would violate the issue of Hela Bechutz. And so we know that there's a machlok there. We don't even know how to transfer that machlok to our discussion. When I have a kometz, a flour and oil, and some of the oil gets separated from the kometz, and now I'm going to just simply have them touching one another on the Mizbeach. So is that considered a chibur, yes or no? So it could be, says the Gemara, that that could be the machlok between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. But then the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara says it could be that literally it has nothing to do with the machlok is over there. And the Gemara made arguments for both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, how it is that that case over there can be separate from our cases over here. If you'd like, you could see the Rashi. I'm not going to do it now, but the Rashi of Etzem, he parsed the end of the Rashi. I know it's a short couple of lines, but he offers another explanation of the Gemara that we just learned altogether. So see the end of the Rashi for another proposed explanation of what the Gemara was dealing with.
Two questions. One, Reish Lakish said that there's no requirement to put the bone on the Mizbeah, but then the requirement for Ola is that everything has to be burned. So it means that the bone has to be burned also.
Right, but the mitzvah, correct. The mitzvah is principally to burn the meat of a carbon Ola. Now the bones, there's no requirement in the Torah to strip the meat of the bones. So the bones are going to go, but the bones are just coming as literally an attachment. But that's it. If the bones, for whatever reasons, were flying off the Mizbech, there's no need to put them back on again. Yeah, okay.
That argument in terms of comparing the comets, the flour to the oil, as opposed to the meat and the bone. The meat and the bone naturally come together.
That was one of the arguments the Gemara gave.
Yeah.
Right, correct. That's one of the arguments.
What about the case where either two kazayas went up, one went up at 1 p.m., one at 3 p.m., or the comets, you put one on one part of the wood, the other on the other part of the wood. Is that the whole trial, or would that be for sure, I would agree that...
I don't know. Too much for me to think about. Sorry for, you know. But in other words, just our case over here is just dealing with the scenario and a question, a conceptual question of, is connection considered now a reunion between the two?
A reconnection.
Is that considered now a reunion between the two so that it's considered one entity? And so the Gemara says, okay, we don't know. Take Shtei Menachos Shelo Nikmetzu. We start now the Mishnah on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, and here we go back to Tarovis. Again, let's remind each other. Before we see the Mishnah inside. Okay. Anything going up onto the Mizbeach is what we described earlier in yesterday's daf as being Olin. Olin, according to the Chachamim, are Ein Mevat Lo Zu Et Zu. They do not negate one another. Anytime you have something that's going up onto the Mizbeach, It maintains identity. This was what we learned yesterday. It's the Chacham Chaim's position. And so therefore, even in a mixed form, even as a Tarovis, each one maintains identity. As you remembered yesterday's daf, how do we know that? We know that simply because of the Dam of Yom Kippur. And in Yom Kippur, you're going to take the blood of a bull and the blood of the goat, you're going to put them, the Kohen Gadol is going to pour them together, going to sprinkle it onto the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and the Torah still gives each one its identity, even as they're mixed together. And we know the Gemara said in yesterday's daf, there's going to be a lot more blood of the bull than there is going to be of the goat, and yet each one maintains its identity. So that's clear. Everyone agrees to that. It's now, what's the derivation from that? What do we learn from that? So as we learned in yesterday's daf, according to the Chachamim, what we learned from that is nothing to do with Min Bimino. Min Bimino is incidental, but what we learn from that is that when we have Olin, anything that is used on the Mizbeach, in this case it's the Mizbeach HaPnimi, but still the same point, anything that's going to go on to the Mizbeach, so each is always going to maintain identity. Well, there will always be preservation of identity. And according to Rav Yehuda, no. What we gain from here, according to Rav Yehuda, is the concept of Min Bimino. Because it's blood and it's blood, so therefore there will never be a loss of identity. Min bimino eino bato, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, that's what we saw in yesterday's daf. It's important to remind each other of that, as that will become once again extraordinarily important in today's daf as we're about to enter into this Mishnah. Okay, so everyone, just let's make sure that you have Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim's position clear and fresh in our mind. Now let's take a look at our Mishnah. Shtei menachos shlo nikmetzu. So I have two menachos which the comments has not yet been removed. Vinis arvu zubazu, and they got mixed up to one with another. Im yachol likmos mizu bifne atzmo ksheres. Now, if there is still some clear identity of each mincha in of itself, if you'd like, by the way, a great visualization would be like a Punnett square. Like, Punnett circle, I should say, where the two circles now overlap just a little bit. So there is certainly some middle which has a combination of the two. But at the same time, however, there also is the external portion of each mincha which has maintained its identity, its independent identity. So what the Kohen now could do is he can come in from one side and do a kmitza from one, and he can come in from the other side and do a kmitza from the other. The Mishnah says if that's how the two menachos got mixed together, so then it's fine. So mincha shel nikmetzu v'nisarv zubazu im yachol likmos mizeh b'fnei atzmo ksheros. Fine. V'imah psulos. However, if the mixtures between the two menachos are so blended together now that I literally have no identity of either one by themselves, I only see it now as an entire tarovis, so then you can't take off the kmitza. Because when you're taking off the kmitza, you don't know what is the shirayim of the kmitza you're taking from. Another case in the Mishnah is where I have a kometz of one mincha. Obviously, that means that the kometz was taken off of one mincha. This now is earmarked and dedicated to go on to the Mizbech and be burnt on the top of the Mizbech. And it got mixed up before it got to the top of the Mizbech. It got mixed up with a mincha shelo nikmetza, where kometz has not been taken off. Lo yakter. So the Mishnah now says that you can't take it and burn it on the top of the Mizbeach. Meaning, let's say what the Mishnah is assuming for sure you can't do. You can't take off a kmitza, because right now there is a kmitza of another mincha that got mixed in here, and you don't know where that is. And when you're taking off the kmitza, so literally you have no idea what you're taking off. You could have been taking off part of the kmitza of the previous one. You could be taking off some of the kmitza of this one, but literally you have no idea. So taking off a kmitza is not an option. It's not open for. It's not under discussion. How about taking the entire mixture now and just throwing it onto the top of the mizbeach? Now, in terms of the mincha that has not yet been kometzed, it's a helfnisht. It's not going to help at all. However, for the kometz that got mixed in, so at least that kometz got burnt on now on the top of the mizbeach, granted as a tarovis, but it got burnt on the top of the mizbeach. So for the person who was offering the mincha, where the kometz has been taken off, so his shirayim now would be kasher shirayim. So let's do that, and that's what the Mishnah now is addressing. L'chatchila, don't do that. And the reason why you shouldn't do that is very simple. Because you're now, in burning the kometz of the first mincha, you're also burning shirayim. I understand you haven't yet separated it, but you are also burning shirayim of another mincha, and by the shirayim, it's not the mincha of a kohen, you're not allowed to burn on the top of the mizbeach. So lo yaktir. So that's what the Mishnah says, that lichatchili shouldn't burn it. However, v'im hikter, zush nikmetz ola labalim, v'zush lo nikmetz ola labalim. If, however, I took this entire tarovis of, remember, what is it a composite of? A komitz of one mincha, and a full mincha, an unkomitz mincha of somebody else. So as these, if, so lichatchila don't burn on the mizbeach, but if you do, so vis-a-vis the first mincha where the komitz was in this tarovis, you're good. Meaning now the shirayim is acceptable shirayim as the komitz was burnt on the top of the mizbeach. But obviously, this mincha was not ola labalim, didn't work for the owner. You didn't take off kamitz, you didn't burn the kamitz on the mizbeach. Granted, you burned the entire thing on the mizbeach, but not a komitz of it. And therefore, for the second person, it's lo ala labalim. It simply didn't work for the second person. That's case number two of the Mishnah. Case number three of the Mishnah. Nisarv komitza b'shireha. O b'shireh shel chaverta lo yaktir. Third case of the Mishnah is I took the komitz off. The kohen took the kamitza off the mincha and then, by accident, put it back into the mincha. And so now I have a mixture of komitz and shirayim. But now, what am I going to do? I can't just simply take another kamitza, because again, we already now assign status for which part is the kometz and which part is the shirayim. For the kohen now to put his fist in again, the likelihood is that he's not going to be taking out the kometz, but he's going to be taking out some of the shirayim. But once the part of the shirayim has been given the label and the status of shirayim, that part cannot be burnt on the mizbeach. So, lichatchila, basically dispose of it. However, the im hikter ola labalim. But b'di'eved, if it goes onto the mizbech and burnt on top of the mizbech, the owner of this mincha now will get a check. Why will he get a check? Because the kametz was taken off and the kametz was burnt. Admittedly, albeit, the shirayim were also burnt, but vis-a-vis getting a check mark for your mincha, as long as the kametz is burnt on the mizbech, so the owner has received a check. Of course, the kohanim are not going to be eating the shirayim in such a scenario. Okay, but in terms of essentiality, as long as the kamitz is burnt on the mizbeach, a check is received for the owner.
The measurement, okay, though, is not exact.
I'm not understanding your question.
You put it back and you take it back. That's
all. No, you don't take it. No, in other words, you don't take it back. In other words, once the kamitz goes accidentally back into the shirayim, so really, primarily, what should be done is disposal. That's principally what should be done. What the Mishnah is telling us is that if that entire mishnah now goes on to the mizbeach, so then the kamitz got burnt. And that's b'di'eved, that would be fine. The owner would receive a check. Okay, so we have three cases in the Mishnah. All three cases are cases of tarovis. And the Mishnah gives a psak for each one of the cases. Now, Amar of Chisda, Nevela Batela B'Shchuta. And so now we start with the sugya, which quite frankly is a challenging sugya. In other words, we'll navigate. I'll try my best to navigate through the sugya. But it certainly is it's going to really force us to think, all of us. Nevela b'tela b'shchuta. So Rav Chisda starts off with a statement, which is that if I have a nevela that gets mixed in with shchuta. Now, in terms of tarovis, so let's all realize and appreciate that whenever we have the Gemara giving us this scenario of a nevela in a shchuta, so that means that the nevela is a minority and the shchuta is a majority. When something goes into something else, so the assumption we're always going to make is that whatever goes into is a majority. Of course, it doesn't have to be that way. But in terms of the way the Gemara presents, that's generally the conventional way of presentation. Something goes into something which is a majority. So here I have a nevela, and we're not talking about karbanos right now. We're just talking about simple animals. One animal is a nevela. Therefore, it is obviously usur to eat. And also, it's going to be a source of tumah. And it goes into a bunch of animals that are shchuta. I don't really mean animals, I mean the meat of the animals that received a proper shchita. Obviously, the animals that received a proper shchita are not nevela and therefore don't give off tumah. So now, when the nevela goes into the shchuta, now we're going to have bittel. She'i efshar l'shchuta, shetasa nevela. Because the shchuta can never become a nevela. And let me try to explain this as well as I can. We all know that a nevela is an avatuma. If an animal would die without the benefit of a proper shechita, so again, leave kashrus, leaving eating it out of the discussion. Obviously, we're not allowed to eat it, But right now we're focusing on the aspect of tuma. So if an animal dies without the benefit of a shechita, the animal now is a nevela. A nevela is an av hatuma, it's a source of tuma. We learned already many times throughout Shas that the communication of tuma can come either through maga or through masa. Either touching the nevela or even carrying the nevela, lifting the nevela, one becomes tame. A person becomes tame. So it is able to transmit its tuma from it, the nevela, to a person. It's an avatama. Now, when you have an animal, I'm sorry, just give me a second. When you have an animal which is a shchuta, so that means now that it's not a nevela. Now, obviously the meat of a shechted animal can become tame. But in other words, but never to the degree of a nevela. Meaning if you have a sheretz touching it, or any source of tuma coming to touch it. So it's going to become tame, but it won't be an av hatuma. It's only going to be a vlad hatuma. A shechted animal will never obtain the level of nevela. And so therefore, here's what Rav Chisda's argument sounds like. Because now, the majority in this particular tarovis, in this composition, the majority now is shechted animal, which can never become a nevela, so therefore this is going to be a case of min b'she'eno mino. It's unlike substances getting mixed together, and as a result of that, so therefore there will be bittul. Now, if we are over here qualifying the part, the whether this is a mixture of min b'mino versus min b'she'eno mino, what is that telling us? That right now we are subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning that's why I said we have to have the positions fresh in our mind. Rav Yehuda says that min b'mino is in a batal. So over here, by Rav Chisda teaching us that in such a case, because the shchuta animal can never become nevela, we therefore going to be qualifying this as min b'she'eno mino, and consequently, subsequently, there is going to be bittul. Okay, v'shchuta eino b'tela b'nevela. However, if I have shechted animal that gets mixed in with nevela animal, so it's eino betela. It's never going to become batal. Why? She'efshel nevela she'ta'ase shechuta. Because if an animal becomes a nevela, it can become a shechted animal. Now again, let's all listen carefully. Let's all hear this carefully. The Gemara is not saying that an animal that's a nevela can ever become kosher la'achila. It's not going to become kosher la'achila. It can never become kosher la'achila. Although, once it rots and once it spoils, and it's no longer edible, now the truth of the matter is that this takes us to chulin, which we're going to learn later on. I'm saying this totally parenthetically. I'm saying it even under my breath. So then, yeah, you're allowed to eat it, but when we're talking about allowed to eat it, something that which is inedible. But not for us right now. What we're focusing on right now is the idea that once a nevela animal is no longer edible, so then as terms of being a nevela, it's no longer a nevela. In other words, it loses its nevela status. So it's possible from a tuma standpoint for a nevela to lose its nevela status, i.e. when it no longer is edible. Afshar le nevela shetasa shchuta, delechi mesarcha, because once it spoils, parcha tumasa, the tuma goes away. And so now, when I have a shechted animal getting mixed in with nevela, because the nevela can actually convert and become non-nevela, so what we have over here is a mixture of min b'mino. Now, even though currently, as when they were originally mixed together, it was nevela and shchuta getting mixed together, but because the nevela is convertible to shchuta. And I know it sounds strange as I say it, but again, in other words, if we wait some time and wait for the nevela to start rotting, once it rots, now the nevela is no longer tame. So, let's just hear this out. So because the nevela now can become shchuta vis-a-vis tuma, so now we're talking about a mixture of min b'mino, and again, right now we're subscribing to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda, and min b'mino is eino batal.
Question.
Okay.
Why don't we look at it as the varshu yesh lamatirin then?
A davar sheyesh lamatirin.
Right. So there's no pitul then if there's yesh lamatirin.
Right.
So you're
that's
saying
basically it's basically what the Gemara is saying. That's exactly what I mean. It's basically what the Gemara is saying.
Yeah, because can't that happen in the first case, Rabbi?
It can't happen in the first case because a shchuta can never become a nevela.
But nevela could become rotten. And
right. So in other words, what Rav Chisda is telling us is that in terms of which one we're looking at in to become like the other. So you have to stay with what is the majority. Okay, fine. Danny, you're already ahead of the game. Meaning you already figured out one of the most critical points of this entire discussion. Okay, good. So, Rabbi Chanina Amar, and Rabbi Chanina says, look, I agree, but from my standpoint, it's the inversion of what we just said. Meaning that everything builds one point on top of another. I'm going to start with the assumption that we hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that min b'mino is in a bato. And now it's just a question of establishing when it's min b'mino versus min b'she'eino mino. And yes, I also agree that if something is convertible to the other, so then it could be min b'mino, but here's where I and Rav Chista totally disagree. I mean Rabbi Chanina. Here's where Rabbi Chanina and Rav Chista totally disagree. Which of the two has to be the one which is convertible in order to view this as min b'mino? Rabbi Chanina amar, kol she'efshar lo lios kamohu, eino batel. V'chol she'i efshar lo lios kamohu, batel. And what Rabbi Chanina says is that from the standpoint of not the majority, but from the minority, if the minority can become the majority, min b'mino. If the minority cannot become the majority, then it's min b'she'eino mino. I know I said it quickly, but basically it's the previous case, but just flip around what can turn into what. Now, Ali b'daman. Now, the Gemara is going to make the point, which quite frankly, everyone here around the table knows already, but the Gemara is just going to make it clear. This entire discussion between Rav Chisra and Rav Chanina is operating within whose opinion? So we all know the answer already. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda. But the Gemara is just simply now going to spell it out. Aliba daman. I aliba de rabbanan ha'amri olin hu d'lo mevad le'adade. Ava min b'mina bato. As far as the Chachamim are concerned, this has nothing to do with Karbanos. This is a discussion of nevelin shchuta, of non-Karbanos. And so, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, there's always bittel. Min b'mino, min b'sheino mino, it doesn't matter. There's always going to be bittel. Only something which is an ola on the Mizbeach is something which retains identity. But over here, we're not talking about Karbanos. So what difference does it make? Min b'mino, min b'sheino mino should make a difference. In I aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, now the Gemara says, okay, good. So we're not looking like the Chachamim, we're looking like Rabbi Yehuda. That's wonderful. But Rabbi Yehuda basa chazusa azil. But in terms of Rabbi Yehuda, when describing whether it's min b'mino or min b'sheino mino, what are the characteristics that identify whether it's min b'mino versus min b'sheino mino? We think we know the answer, meaning what is a prototype example of Rabbi Yehuda? The bloods of Yom Kippur. And that is a case of min b'mino. Why is that a case of min b'mino? Because it's blood, and it's blood. And so the characteristic of this of determining whether it's min b'mino is chazusa, appearance. So as long as they appear the same, so that will be the determinant of min b'mino versus min b'sheino mino. And over here now we're introducing now new parameters of what is min b'mino versus min b'sheino mino, and we're talking now about whether one can turn into another, the conversion of one into another, that seemingly has nothing to do with Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, idvi idim min b'mino hu. So Ella, and over here in this case, of nevel and shchuta, that's meat, and that's meat. And they look the same. And so therefore, according to Rav Yehuda, this should be case of the min b'mino. It should be an open and shut discussion, according to Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara over here is now going to introduce a third position. Okay, so the Gemara now goes to Lafield, and the Gemara takes from Lafield Rabbi Chia. Didni Rabbi Chia, nevel v'shchuta b'tel zubazu. Now Rabbi Chia says that nevel and shchuta become nullified one in the other. Now Rabbi Chia liba deman. But the Gemara says, okay, but what are you doing over here? You're introducing Rabbi Chia as if he's coming in from another planet. He's not coming in from another planet. Meaning even Rabbi Chia is working within a construct of either there is or there isn't bita when it comes to min b'mino. So the Gemara says, who's Rabbi Chia going like? Aliba deman, I aliba de rabbanan hamri olin hu, de la mevat le'adad yehamim b'mino bato. Meaning, according to the Chachamim, Even if it's min bemino, it's subject to bittul. And v'yali, but the Rabbi Yehuda come in bemino, the Rabbi Yehuda lo bato. I'm sorry, lo bato. And if we're holding like Rabbi Yehuda, we know that when we, as it relates to Rabbi Yehuda, min bemino is there's no bittul. So lo olam aliba the Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says like this: Rabbi Chiya is working within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. V'chi kama Rabbi Yehuda min bemino lo bato. Hani mila hechad de'efshar la. Let me have a kavase. Ava hechad de'lo efshar la. Let me have a kavase bato. So the Gemara says like this: Rabbi Chiya is really a version of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Chiya is taking a position that is fundamentally, conceptually, a Rabbi Yehuda position. That there is no bittul when it comes to min bemino. But what Rabbi Chiya is doing now is he's giving his version of what are the characteristics, what are the parameters of min bemino. According to Rabbi Chiya, min bemino means that even though they're not the same right now, as long as one is convertible into the other, so then that would be an example of min bemino, and therefore it's not going to be subject to bittul. So it is Rabbi Yehuda, but with a wrinkle. It's Rabbi Yehuda, min bemino, and a bittul, but the wrinkle is that even though currently it's not min bemino, but if we wait a little bit, it becomes min bemino, so now it would conform to the position of Rabbi Yehuda of min bemino in a bittul. So here we go. So it's now in terms of layering the positions, we start with an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, min bemino in a bittul. We then, Rabbi Chiya has a wrinkle in his understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that even though it's not currently min bemino, but it will become min bemino, it now takes on the characteristic of min bemino, and therefore it's not bittul, even in the current state that it's in. And now, add one more layer to this, and that is that even within the opinion of Rabbi Chiya, which is more significant in terms of its ability to convert to the other, the majority or the minority? And in that we have now a machlokas amarayim between Rev Chista and Rabbi Chanina. And like I said in the beginning of the sugya, I understand that this is going to be a little bit difficult. So we have first Rabbi Yehuda, followed then by Rabbi Chiya's wrinkle within Rabbi Yehuda, followed then by the Amoraim in terms of understanding Rabbi Chiya, and now what is critical in terms of which one is going to convert. And now if you go back to what we saw in the beginning, let's go back to Rav Chista. Let's hear this carefully. According to Rav Chista, Nevela becomes Batal in Shchuta. Shchuta over here obviously represents the majority. Nevela now represents the minority. And there is going to be Bittul. Why? She'i efshar l'shchuta shetas en Nevela. Because the majority can't convert and become a nevela. Like we explained, a shechth, an animal, although, yes, it is susceptible to tumah, but it can never take on nevela status. So as far as Rav Chista's understanding is concerned, what has to be convertible if the majority cannot become the minority, this now qualifies as min b'she'en omino. Obviously, the flip, if the minority can become the majority, so then that would be a case of min bemino. And Rabbi Chanina says just the opposite. If the majority can convert to the minority, that's min bemino. If the minority can convert to the majority, that's min b'she'en omino in its current state.
What's confusing about min bemino in this discussion is both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan, do they have meaning of both physical appearance and metaphysical appearance in a way?
Well, right.
Because one of them is saying like this looks like this. Look, it's the physical seeing. But then there is one of them is tuma and so on. It's the metaphysical. So they both agree that min bemino means both
name or appearance.
Right.
Appearance.
So,
yeah. Appearance right. Plus the
tuma. Name versus appearance.
What?
Name versus appearance.
No. So tuma and appearance.
No, the tuma is not physical.
Right. In other words, we are talking right now about tuma. We're not talking about achila. Right now, just again, I know there's a lot. There's a lot of juggling plates right now. I know.
One to the other, from appearance to tumor. Tumor is a metaphysical, and there is no way of finding what is a tumor or not by appearance.
Right, but here we're just looking at it from the standpoint of I have something which is tummy that get mixed in with something which is not tummy,
right.
And the general rule is that there would be bittul. However, If we subscribe to Rav Yehuda, where it's min bimino, there's never going to be bittul, and each one maintains its identity. Rabbi Chia now is saying within Rav Yehuda, min bimino does not just mean that it's like substances that get mixed together, and by like we mean that they are halachically the same, but according to Rabbi Chia, even if they are going to become halachically the same, that also qualifies as min bimino. And the Amoraim now are arguing is which one has to be able to convert the other in order for it to be min bimino. Okay, again, I know there's a lot to consider over here, and it's a little bit challenging, but that's the basic outline. Let's just do a little bit more for today. I know we're way over. Let's just do a little more for today. Let's just get to the proofs, and then tomorrow we'll start with the proofs. Because so the Hadai Hamin Bemino Bato, the E Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. Did I read this already? Sorry, Aliba de Man. E Aliba de Rabban Hamri Olin. Who I read that? The E Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. I'm starting from the about seventh line down. So come min bimino Rav Yehuda lo bato lo olam alibad Rav Yehuda v'chi kam Rav Yehuda min bimino lo bato hanimi lehech de eshol olam have a kavase ava hech de lo eshol olam have a kavase bato uva ha kamiflagi. And now the Gemara is just simply now layering one on top of the other. Start with Rav Yehuda, now then go to Rav Chia's version of Rav Yehuda, and now the Amoraim. Rav Chista savar basar mivatel azlinan. So Rav Chista says, in terms of what becomes significant, we go after the mivatel, that which nullifies. Which one is that which nullifies? That's the majority. And Rabbi Chanina savar basar batel azlinan. And according to Rabbi Chanina, no, we don't go after the majority in terms of establishing min bimino, but we go after the minority. The minority, if in fact it's convertible, so then it's going to be an example of min bimino. Otherwise, it's not going to be an example of min bimino. So that's what we have right now presented in front of us. Rav Yehuda, Rabbi Chia, and the Amoraim, Rav Chista and Rabbi Chanina, in terms of when is Rabbi Chia's position going to kick in of currently it's not min bimino, but it's convertible, it will therefore become min bimino. Which is convertible? The majority or the minority? Okay, stop over here. Tomorrow we start with the proofs. Four braces coming up. Each one serving as a support for either Rav Chista or Rav Chanina. And again, by the way, keep in mind, the entire discussion of the Gemara over here is all within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda.